You are now listening to the Big Beyond Belief podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Hey, everybody. It's Leo Costa Jr. coming to you from SiriusGrowth.com. I think we have a pretty good show today. I'm going to babble about a few things. I started flashing back the other day. I've been in this thing now for 37 years. And sometimes when I'm driving to work, I have too much time. And one of the things that came to mind was, and I wrote it down as a headline, and I don't ever know where this goes. It could be a headline for something I'm writing. In this case, it's going to be a headline I want to talk about a little bit with regards to bodybuilding. And I called it the devastating bodybuilding lifestyle. When I got into the sport, everything seemed to be by accident, because I was just letting form follow function. I found myself at the age of 27 after being an athlete all my life. Well, the next thing I know, I went from being in the best shape, because as an athlete, I was constantly in shape. I had to be. And all of a sudden, when I decided that I wasn't going to follow my football career, which was my dream, you know, that I always wanted to be a pro athlete. Nothing more than I wanted to be was a pro athlete. And then one day, because of some injuries, and mainly because I basically just let myself down as I continue to analyze that, I used my injuries as a way to say, you know, maybe this isn't for me. And so all of a sudden, I'm on a dairy and working unhappy. And when I got into bodybuilding, it was basically because I was really in horrible shape. At 27, I was out of shape horribly, and I needed to do something. And, you know, one thing leads to the other, and I started weight training, and the next thing you know, the bug bit me. And it bit me after I had done a show. I knew at that point that my life was going to change forever. It's almost something that you can't control. And it's weird, because you don't know when you have this kind of a passion for something, it's almost like it has this life of its own. It's like when you're writing something on a piece of paper, when you're really in this moment and you've got a creative thought going on, it's almost as if the pen takes off and you're just following it. When the bug of bodybuilding bit me like this, it was forever me just following what was going on here. I knew nothing about the sport, because as an athlete back in the late 80s, believe it or not, in a position that I played in, which was a quarterback, it was almost taboo for us to be in the gym. In fact, my coach at Cal Poly Pomona, so weird, because yesterday I talked to him. I hadn't heard from him in a long time. His name is Eric Widmark, one of my mentors. And out of the blue, he called me, you know. And I don't know. So anyway, when this happened to me, I just started, I put my nose in magazines. And because I had to learn what this sport was all about. I'm not one who likes to read very much, but I found myself just reading everything that I possibly could. And the thing that I started noticing about learning all about this sport and lifting, because like I said, back when I was in those days as a football player, they didn't want us to be in the gym. They didn't have that much information to know how beneficial it was. So I was learning weightlifting and learning how to eat and learning all these things in these magazines. And the thing that was crazy was that it almost seemed there for a while, because I knew nothing, that the more information that I was getting from the magazines, the more confusing it was. It was almost worse, frustrating, because it's like you don't know what to believe. And of course, the best way to start learning this stuff is to actually get in and doing it yourself. But, you know, doing it yourself is good, and it needs to be the main thing. But you also have to supplement that with tapping in. The whole point of magazines and reading a book is to tap into somebody else's experiences. And of course, that's what I was doing. So you know, as my dad used to say, things sometimes get worse before they get better. But nevertheless, it was like, you know, my nose was in the magazine and magazines all the time, Muscle and Fitness. Everyone that was out there, I was just reading, just feverishly reading. And, you know, I got to the point where I started training and then one day I decided that I wanted to go to the Mecca of bodybuilding, which is in Venice Beach, California. And man, I tell you, kind of a funny story. So I'm driving and I get into Santa Monica area and I'm on Lincoln Boulevard and I'm driving along. And again, I didn't have any, at that point, I wasn't doing like any navigation. I was just winging it. I just looked up the address. So I stop at what was called Gold's Gym. And so I walk up to this, it was an upstairs gym, small one. And no, it wasn't Gold's Gym. It was the first gym that I came into when I was in Santa Monica. So I thought I'd pull over from there and I'd ask about Gold's Gym is what it was. So I went to this gym and I walked in there and I asked the manager, I said, "Hey, do you happen to know where Gold's Gym is?" And this man told me, he goes, "I have no idea where Gold's Gym is." And I thought to myself, that's weird. How can you not know where the Mecca of bodybuilding is? And, you know, I'm in Santa Monica. Venice wasn't that far away. But this guy was adamant about it. You know, he says he didn't know where Gold's Gym was. So I thought while I was there, I'd just get a little workout in. And I did. And then, of course, I left and I ended up finding Gold's Gym. And the funny thing is the person that told me that he didn't know where Gold's Gym was, his name was Joe Gold. And for those of you that are out there that know about Gold's Gym and how it started, was Joe Gold started that, the gym, the Mecca that I was at. But what had happened was there was a split. There was a, you know, Joe left, he sold Gold's or something happened. And then Joe decided to open up a small gym like that. So I found that to be very, very funny, of course, as time went on, that this guy that was Joe Gold had no idea where the Mecca was. And it was actually his, you know, he's the one that started all this. I thought that was kind of funny. My first entry to learning about Gold's Gym. But anyway, so I found Gold's Gym, and I have to admit to you, at this point now, when I go there, I've been training in my home gym and, you know, learning through magazines and this, that, and the other. And so I thought, okay, I'm in pretty good shape. I'm going to go check it out. And I have to tell you, the first day that I walked into Gold's Gym, my jaw dropped. You know, I'm an athlete and there weren't too many obstacles in my way. When I thought, when I had a goal, and again, as I was training in the gym like this at this point in my life, you know, ultimately what I wanted to do, I thought maybe was to compete someday. If not, at least to get as big as some of the guys I saw in the magazines. When I walked into Gold's Gym that day, my jaw dropped. And to be quite honest with you, my first response was when I saw these guys were huge in there. Monsters. And then some I even recognized from the magazines that I was reading. And my first response was, there's no fucking way that I can possibly get that big. And I hated saying that because it was disappointing. I thought, oh my God, I thought I was doing so well here. And I come into this place and it was like, there's no possible way I can do this. I mean, and consider the fact that I was at this age now, I was about 26 years of age. And in bodybuilding, as I was reading, a lot of these guys that compete, they start really young, like, you know, 18, 15, 18, 19 years of age. And I didn't get into to actually seriously lifting weights until I'm 26, 27. So for me to think that I could ever get close to that size, it was disheartening. But nevertheless, you know, once I got over that initial shock, I went ahead and said, wait a minute, you know, my mindset kicked in and I just said, look, you know, I at least have to give this a shot. And of course I did. And it was really interesting because along the way, I ran across some people. One of the guys that comes to mind was, of course, I came back from that trip, and after being bewildered, I was ready to go again and try to reach my goals. So I joined a gym in Visalia, where I lived, and I ran across a guy, the owner of the gym. His name was Jerry Bailey, and he actually took it and helped me go to the next step. Okay, as far as bodybuilding was concerned, but one of the things that Jerry said one time to me, which I didn't really get, he said, bodybuilding is an illusion. And I found that to be interesting, an illusion. So what he meant by that was when you're up on stage and you're competing, you're trying to minimize your weaknesses and maximize your strengths, because the truth of the matter is, you know, perfection is impossible to reach. It's a nice ideal. And I think that especially in this sport, but in other creative acts that you're doing, I think to reach for perfection is the gold standard. But the reality of that it's very difficult. It's fleeting. And a lot of times the perfection actually comes in the imperfection at the end of the day. But bodybuilding is that type of thing where you're trying to reach perfection, make every body part look perfect. And it doesn't happen that way. And that's what Jerry meant when he said it's an illusion. And so that's when you started learning that obviously when you're training, you're trying to balance out your physique from head to toe. But then when you get up on stage, and the reality is you do have some weak parts, but if you know how to position your body in a certain way to minimize or even hide the weaknesses that you have, because believe me, Arnold Schwarzenegger, as great a bodybuilder as he was, he looked perfect as far as I'm concerned, and yet he had weaknesses. But he knew so well how to create that illusion where the average person or even people that were in the industry, they didn't, you know, you wouldn't know that. So that's what Jerry meant by an illusion. But I'll take it a step further on that illusion. Not only did it apply in this case on stage, but when I was in my early days, when I was reading the magazines, and you know, because in the magazines they'd have guys that were, they would actually write an article, and they talked about how how they worked out, and then they would take a photo shoot of the guy doing the exercise that he was talking about. So when I was reading the magazines, because I was so into this, I would actually count the weight to see how much weight they were doing. And then I would look at the weight and then how many reps. And I thought, I can't believe that these guys are that much stronger than I am. I mean, I wasn't to begin with. I always had above strength. But I found out when I went to Gold's Gym that one time, when I was actually, this is now, I'm into my sport now quite a few years. And one of the crowning moments was to do a photo shoot with Tom Platz at the Mecca. And like I said, you know, when I went there the first time, I was so intimidated and so blown away by what I saw. And then to be able to be what I thought was good enough to be at Gold's Gym to do a photo shoot. I did a photo shoot with Tom Platz. That was probably my biggest moment. Even of all the different shows that I competed in, to be able to be good enough and think I was good enough, and I was, by doing a photo shoot in the Mecca of bodybuilding where all the other pros were, it was still intimidating, but it was thrilling because I did belong there. But I learned about something, and again, this is talking about an illusion. So when I get there to do this photo shoot, Artie Zeller was the guy that did the shoot. For anybody that knows about Artie Zeller, he was like the main man when it came to doing photo shoots for all the pros. So I was dealing with the best at that time. And again, I'm doing the photo shoot with Tom. So that was kind of good, you know, for the first time out like that. So we're getting ready to set up, and I look over and there's some people. It was like the people that were helping set up for the photo shoot. They were walking out of the back room at Gold's Gym with 150-pound dumbbell weights, and they were carrying them like with two fingers. And I thought to myself, what the hell? How can that be? Well, come to find out, is there were a whole set of fake weights in the back room. Dumbbells, free weights, and so this was part of the illusion, and it made me feel better, actually, because I thought, you know, this is what these guys were doing when they were doing these photo shoots, and I'm taking it at face value, like, okay, these guys are doing that much weight for that many reps, and I can't do that? Well, I'm not saying that those guys couldn't do that weight that they were showing in the magazines. It's just that they weren't doing that weight for as many times and as for as many sets as they were talking about. It's a little bit dishonest, I would say, but that's just kind of the sport. It's an illusion. It's to a degree, it's perception being reality. And even to the point where, which is so funny. So when I was getting ready to do like a one-arm dumbbell row, I have this 150-pound fake weight in my hand. This is how they make it look when they're shooting you. And so what they do is they have you actually put the weight, in this case, the finish point of a row is to be right around your armpit. So they said, okay, so Leo, just go ahead and hold the weight at your armpit. And then they said, wait, let's spray your face down with water because that's going to make you look like you're sweating. And then basically you had to pretend like you were straining. So you hold your breath and you open your mouth and it's, ah, and you get your veins to pop out. Okay, that was the photo shoot. That's how they did stuff like that. So again, what Jerry said, you know, bodybuilding was a little bit of an illusion. Well, you know, that's kind of what he meant. That was just part of what goes along with, you know, the sport. You know, that's what makes it go. Anyway, so unfortunately, you know, I had a really good mentor at that time when I was at, we're doing that photo shoot. And of course, Tom Platz at that time was hugely popular. And so anyway, you know, that got me, this is when my bodybuilding was just kind of leading me along. So I go into Gold's Gym. I started training with Tom Platz. And, you know, I think that's what really, you know, when the bug bit me even more is when I was able to go into Gold's Gym and Tom and I started training together. And so that in itself was incredible, because I have to tell you, compared to, you know, time changes everything, but compared to how Tom and I were training back then and the way, especially the way Tom trained, because he was known for training like a wild man. The atmosphere in the gym today, I think personally it's kind of gone to hell a little bit. And I'm sure that it's just a, you know, everything is temporary and it's going to cycle back around again. But the intensity by which Tom Platz trained and I with him, it was scary. The first time that we did a squat, because Tom was known for doing squats, he would do stuff like, he would, you know, his curiosity was like, I wonder how many repetitions of squatting I can do at one time before I, you know, pass out. I mean, that was like his stated goal. And I think Tom, I don't know the exact weight, but I think he like, 135-pound weights on the free bar, I think Tom squatted for 15 minutes straight. And until he passed out. I mean, the guy had that kind of a mindset. It's dangerous, but that was Tom Platz. I mean, he wasn't normal, and he was very scary to train with. The first time I went in and we did squats, you know, he, and this is a guy, God, legs, oh my God, they're not even real. He, so we put 315 on the barbell. And again, we're at Gold's Gym. And Tom came in, I'll never forget. He came in and he was kind of like walking around going, I don't feel too good today. And this, he had this whole thing that he was doing. So Tom went first, 315 on the bar. He cranks out 25 repetitions. And I thought, oh my God, I've just been played a little bit. And my background in sports kicked in. I'm very competitive. And I thought, there's no damn way that I'm going to have him show me up, at least not yet. So I thought, now, mind you, I'm, at this point, I'm like 250 pounds. Tom is 212. So I do have a weight advantage over him, but he has a lot more experience than I do as far as, you know, squatting. So I went under that bar and I thought, I can't embarrass myself. This is bullshit. Well, I ended up doing 27 reps because I wanted to make sure that, you know, I wanted him to know that I'm a player. Oh, okay. Next set, Tom cranks out 30 reps. I mean, this went on. We did three or four sets. I think the highest that we got, believe it or not, with 315 pounds was something like, and this was like the last set. We did something like 35 reps, or it was above 30 reps. And the rest is just history because it never got better with Tom. That was our first set. And then we went on to do like leg extensions. I mean, if you've ever trained with Tom Platz, you'll be able to relate to what I'm telling you. You know, if you think that, and this is one of the things I learned from Tom, if you think that training with perfect form has to always be, believe me, Tom took it to a level where it was anything that would have been considered perfect form. But here's what I learned from Tom, okay? He would do a set that would be really, it would be something that would be perfect form, but then he would start loosening up his style of training. And what was important, and I took this very same approach after I learned this from Tom, was that sometimes it's more about feeling the weight than actually doing perfect form. If you feel what you train, you're probably going to be okay. So to the outsider, it looked like it was bad form, and it was, but we were actually feeling that muscle because the idea behind training in bodybuilding is to train and thoroughly exhaust the muscle. And that's the difference between just weight training and training the muscle to the nth degree. And that's what I learned with Tom, was to take it and keep finding ways to exhaust that muscle. Now, mind you, when you're constantly going to this point when you're training, there's always trade-offs. And when you're pushing your body that far, you're exposing yourself to some injury, to be quite honest with you. But, you know, Tom is just one of those kind of guys. And I thought, well, you know, when you're a Rome, you do what the Romans do. And I just went along and trained with Tom. And there were several instances with him. I mean, when we did we were doing rows, it was T-bar rows. And I've told this story before, but sitting down with Tom, Tom said, hey, why don't you go ahead and get a breathing bench? And I'm thinking, breathing bench? What the hell's a breathing bench? Never heard of that before. And I've been in the gym now for about 6-8 years. So I unfortunately had to ask, and it was nothing more than a flat bench. And he just wanted a flat bench that, you know, we had there to rest. So I learned really quickly what that breathing bench was for, because T-bar rows, the first set that we did was 75 pounds, and we did that for 100 reps. And the 100 reps, we did another two more times. We did three sets of T-bar rows. Can you imagine trying to do a T-bar row for 100 reps? It's insane. And the next thing I know, I was on the breathing bench because that was the place I was trying to survive. I mean, in between sets, and Tom, both of us, I mean, in between sets, we'd sit down on that bench, our head was between our legs. We were basically all we could do to recover for the next set. And this is like what the difference is between the intensity now and back then, was because that intensity that I learned in training with Tom carried over, was when you stepped into the gym, it was about doing the work. And you kind of knew when you were in that moment, when you were taking the rest periods to hang on to your life, to recover, so you continue on. Because at this point, when we did three sets of you know, with 75 pounds, that was one of 16 sets that we did. Now, mind you, we did not, we couldn't do 100 pounds for every set, but we just kept breaking it down. I think the lightest that we got down to was maybe 50 pounds. And the reps got no lower than 25. But can you imagine doing 16 sets of T-bar rows? And that was not the end of the workout. That was just one of the exercises that we did for back. We still had to do things like lat pull downs and, you know, deadlift. I mean, there were other exercises that we continued to do. There was one training session I did with Thomas working biceps, that my bicep, I was so sore the following day, and I kid you not, I woke up and my arms were like in a, like an L position. I couldn't straighten my arms out. They were so sore, both of them, I could not straighten them out. I had to have my wife bring hot towels, and I was going to work, and I couldn't straighten my damn arms out. I had to have her bring me hot towels so I could actually straighten my arms out. This is the kind of stuff that was when things and how the gym was back then. It was that kind of intensity. Now, keep in mind, you know, your body adapted to that, believe it or not. But the point is, it was so intense and back in those days that it's really changed now. It's kind of sad in a way. And one of the other stories about Tom and how I met him was I was wanting to get closer to some, actually I wanted to meet Tom, and this is, you know, obviously I'm not telling these stories in chronological order, because I was obviously training with Tom. But prior to that, before I started working out with Tom, in that period before that, I wanted to meet him. And so what I did one point, I just decided to get on a plane and go to what's called a FIBO. A FIBO is a big, like a health and fitness fair in Europe that they do every year. And I mean, this thing is huge. Anybody and everybody that's in the industry is there. All the pros are there. Anybody that's selling equipment, they're there. I mean, it was humongous. I had never seen anything like this. But prior to actually getting into the FIBO, so I thought, well, I know nothing too much about the FIBO other than what I've read. And I decided to get on a plane. And I went to Germany, not knowing exactly where the hell I was going. So I get on a plane. It was a couple of days before the event. It turns out there were five pros on that plane. And I thought, man, what a way. I have these guys that are captive here. And what a way for me to be able to meet these guys. I got 13 hours to do it. And I was scared shitless because I, you know, these guys are so intimidating that, but I was motivated by something bigger. And I wanted to, I had written, I think at this point, I had already written a couple bodybuilding courses. So I was getting I've been around for a little bit, but, you know, meeting Tom Platz, which was one of my things I really wanted to do, was like the next step, I thought. And so I'm on the plane, there's five pros there. And as it turns out, you know, as I was walking up and down the aisle, I was just using it as an excuse to stretch. But I ended up talking to every one of those pros. I, you know, just nothing major, just who they were, because I recognized them. They're very nice. And anyway, so we land in Germany. I'm just following these guys because I didn't know where the hell I was going. And so I'm just straggling along there. And when we get to the front, I didn't even have a hotel. You know, it was just that off the wall, off the cuff. So we get to Germany. I'm kind of straggling along. And lo and behold, guess who's picking up the five pros? Tom Platz. At that time, he was working for the WBF. You know, Tom's been out of the sport now for a while, and he's working for, I think it was Jim McMahon was his name. Tom was like the, he was like the face of the WBF in a way. And because, you know, Tom was very famous, and of course, you know, they're recruiting people to compete in that WBF. And the whole point of that was they were trying to do this in a natural way. And Tom was sort of the face of that, something brand new. But anyway, Tom was the one to pick these guys up. And so I'm just kind of straggling along, and he looked at me, he was very friendly. He said, yeah, you need to ride somewhere. And I said, as a matter of fact, I do. Well, I got in a van with these five pros. Turns out they were all going to the event. And I met Tom Platz at the airport. And so I was one of the passengers that he was taking to this hotel where these guys were staying. And I mean, you know something, I was in networking mode because I wanted Tom Platz. And Tom asked me what I was doing there. And I said, well, I came to see the event. He said, do you have a ticket? And I said, no, I didn't know that I needed one. He goes, yeah, you can't get in because this thing is sold out. Okay. Tom gives me a ticket for the next day. This is how I met Tom Platz. This is, and I ended up staying at that hotel. Just so happened that they had some room there. But this is how this all came about. And the next day, I was at the FIBO. And oh my, it was one of the most amazing things I had ever seen. And I met Tom Platz. And this guy was so gracious at that time. He gave me, you know, we ended up talking. And I told him, I said, look, you know, I've been doing this now. I'm in the industry. I'm pretty much a newbie. I've trained. I've written a couple of training courses. And I just flat out told him, I said, I'm writing this book with my partner. It's called Big Beyond Belief. And I was just straight with him. I said, I'd like you to be the face of that. And I'd like you to, you know, because I knew that if Tom Platz would agree to come on board, and, you know, because of the fact that he had so much, I mean, he was so popular. He was like the most popular guy on tour as far as like seminars, and everybody knew him. I thought if I could get him to come on board with us and be, and he was kind of the face of Big Beyond Belief, because he told me, he said, look, I'm in a contract with the WBF, and he goes, I'm interested, but it's going to have to be a year before I'm able to do that. And I thought, wow, that was amazing for me. I mean, talk about flying high. Here's a guy that I wanted to meet, you know, in essence. I mean, he was an idol to a lot of people. Just his legs were an idol to a lot of people. And I got to meet him, and he said that, you know, in about a year. Of course, you know, I thought, okay, when it all, you know, when all that wore off and I came back to the States, I'm thinking, I wonder if he'll really actually do that, if he'll get back to me. And sure enough, because Tom said he had a year on the contract. When he was out of the contract, he reached out to me, and the rest is history. He came on board. He was the face of Big Beyond Belief. And I have to tell you something. I think I got way more out of this than I ever thought I would, because Tom Platz was, he taught me the ropes about how to handle people. When he was at the FIBO, because actually years later, him and I went to a FIBO, because at that point, this is when he was working with us. And I went to that FIBO with Tom, and he taught me the ropes. Tom and I did I never felt more like a rock star than I did when we went back that next year. It was like either a year or within 2 years, we went back, because their FIBOs are on all over Europe. There was one, when we went back, there was one in Paris, and then there was also one in Germany. And so, you know, I was now kind of on tour with Tom Platz, and we were promoting our Big Beyond Belief. And I have to tell you, one of another moment, I'm just flashing all this stuff now. One of the other moments that I had that was just amazing for me, I never felt more like a rock star than I did when I was in Paris. Tom Platz and I were introduced as, you know, coming on stage and to do a posing routine. Back then, I have to tell you, it was really funny. A lot of the guys, they would do a posing routine for the people that were at these shows. And so it wasn't uncommon. But what wasn't common was that Tom and I were doing a posing routine together. We had it all scripted out. It was pretty funny, actually. But if you could imagine, I was in front of 5,000 people to do this with Tom. People were there to see Tom. You know, I was a side effect in a way. And I was on his coattails. That was just part of my gig, was just to, you know, learn from that perspective. But to be in front of 5,000 people in a pair of Speedos, I have to tell you, it scares the living shit out of you. But at the same time, it was like I was on a high for the rest of the time that I was there. So we did this posing routine together, and then of course we had a booth there that we were promoting the Big Beyond Belief. But here's the part that was just really bizarre. People were so enthralled. Listen, me coming to Europe, even though I wasn't really well known at that time, I was just rising up in the ranks. I was probably, you know, at the just past maybe a regional level. But for me, coming from America with Tom Platz and coming from Venice Beach, I did not realize how much weight that held for the people in Europe. We were gods over there, man. I mean, when we were in the booth, it was eerie. People would be like, you know, maybe like 6 inches away from us. Like if you were on the side of the booth, people would be, they wanted to be that close to see these guys, these gods. I mean, it's hard to imagine that people actually feel that way. But they did, to the point that when Tom and I took a break to have lunch, we had to have security around us so we could eat our lunch. I mean, I never knew how that would feel. It was eerie, but at the same time, I loved it. I mean, you talk about that adulation is addicting, you know, as much as the sport of bodybuilding is. And believe it or not, it got to the point where even though it was eerie and people were watching us eat and what we were eating, it was like they, at some point, it was like they weren't really even there. You just got used to that, which was, I don't know, man, I'll never forget that kind of stuff. So anyway, you know, the sport has been really, really good to me, and I've had different idols along the way as I was coming through. One of my biggest idols before I ever met Tom was a guy by the name of Mike Minster. And I think the reason I was drawn to him was because he had a body similar to mine. I don't have a classical physique. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger has a very classical physique, very wide shoulders and very narrow waist, classic V. And Mike Minster and Dorian Yates, these are all guys, they have what's called a Herculean type of physique. They're thick. They're very dense with muscle. They don't have that V, but man, they're just absolutely enormous and thick, muscle upon muscle. And Minster was, you know, so his body style and body type was more like mine. So obviously I was drawn to those types of guys because that was more like what I would look like if I ever got to that point. And I remember meeting Mike in Vegas. And I got to tell you, that guy, you know, unfortunately, he died way too young. And I think that guy was like, to be honest with you, he was a genius. And I think that was part of his issue. He was so fucking smart and he was so intellectual about the way he went about the sport that I just think he just drove himself nuts. And I mean, even to the point where when I talked to him at this Vegas show, he was, again, very nice guy. But as it turns out, like, you know, once I really got to know him and I'd, you know, and see him at Gold's Gym, then all of a sudden, Mike was like, I started hearing these stories, unfortunately. And, you know, the guy just, he had like this huge mail order business And he fucked it all up. I mean, he just would never answer anybody. And I don't know, I guess he was so smart that the best way to explain that is he drove himself crazy. But that guy was a giant in the industry. And he came up with his own training system, and he had quite a following. He was one of the guys that really impacted me along the way, along with Dorian Yates. There's another guy. And Dorian, I met in, I think it was at the Arnold Schwarzenegger Classic. And there's a guy that was, he was such a good for the sport. He was really good and an ambassador for the sport and nice guy. And, you know, it's hard to find people that actually advance sometimes the sport because they, you know, in some cases you got a lot of people out there. A lot of bodybuilders are just, they're drama queens and high maintenance, and they're not good for the sport and they don't advance that. But Dorian Yates definitely was somebody who made that sport better. And I think he's still around. But anyway, and then of course there's Arnold, you know, Arnold started this whole thing way back when, and I got a chance to meet Arnold I met him at the Arnold Classic. I was with Tom, and we, after the event was over, we got invited up to a VIP party. And of course I got invited because of Tom. Tom knew Arnold real well, and we got invited up there, and I ended up smoking cigars. Back then, it was very popular to be smoking cigars, and we were all there with Arnold. And I tell you what, it was, you know, to be around those guys. And at first, it's pretty, you don't know what to think, you know, how they're going to be. And I will say this, you know, for what it's worth, Arnold was a very down to earth guy. He was a prankster. He was always known for that. But he was a very down to earth guy. I mean, even when later on, when I was constantly going to Gold's Gym to train, Arnold had a restaurant there called Shotzi's, and it's not there anymore. But you know, you'd see Arnold walking around there, and you know, I guess when you're around, I know it is when you're around people all the time. The people in Venice and Santa Monica, you know, didn't crowd around Arnold; they left him alone. And he was just a regular guy. I mean, unlike when he went to his own Arnold Classic, I mean, you know, you talk about people, you know, swamping him. But Arnold was I found him to be a very nice guy. And he was, you know, a good time. We smoked a lot of cigars together. So anyway, I just thought, you know, that it would be interesting to talk about some of these guys and some of the sport. And going back to my original title, The Devastating Bodybuilding Lifestyle. And here's kind of where this all goes. You know, when you get into something like bodybuilding that is this demanding, because it is demanding, it's unforgiving. In order to be able to reach, you know, national or world level or pro status, most people have no idea what it takes. And it's not unusual. I'm not complaining about it, but you know, this sport is addicting to the point where there's actually no rehab and you don't want one. But there are so many trade-offs to the sport. Not only, you know, are you posed and always facing the threat of getting injured, because if you want to reach that level, not only do you have to do the work, but you have to push the body to its extreme, and you have to walk in fire every time that you walk into the gym. I mean, it's a suffer fest. And the sport ends up taking its toll on you one way or the other. Not only because of it putting you at a danger, but it takes its toll on relationships. Listen, you know, here's the mindset back then. And I call this rabbit hole mindset. You go into this rabbit hole when you're in it as far as I was, and you're willing to risk death for the sake of getting up on stage. And it's scary to be in that rabbit hole. It's almost like you can't help yourself. And for what? I mean, I wouldn't change a thing, but think about it. To get up on stage, to get a trophy, I mean, this is at the amateur level, not even to make money on it, at least for the actual event. But you're willing to put your life at risk. And I remember a story. I was about 2 weeks away from a competition, and I got an infection in my right arm. And the doctor told me, he said, you can't compete because you're risking. I mean, I had all this pus buildup in my arm to the point where it was like 32 ounces of pus, if you can imagine that, in my right arm. And the doctor said that you're risking your life if you go up on stage like that. And I just said, you know, I'm going to go whether you tell me I can or not. And this is the kind of mindset that almost all of us had that were in this rabbit hole. And can you imagine having that kind of a mindset that, you know, at that time I was married with kids, and the sport is so narcissistic to the point that I was sick of myself, but it was like being a drug addict. You know, I knew the sport's all about I, and if you don't have a support system, and it's difficult to have a support system when everything is about you. And, you know, and yet again, you have this mindset, you're in a rabbit hole, and it just didn't matter whether or not I was risking now my possibly losing my family, which actually happened. You know, I ended up getting a divorce down the road, and I'm not going to say that the sport by itself was the reason, but you know what? It's, again, there's always trade-offs when you do stuff, and when you're trying to attain any kind of a goal like this, you have to at least try to put yourself in a spot rationally, you know, to be objective and say, okay, what's the downside? But it's just, you know, it's kind of a no-win situation. And I have to tell you, the thing about it is, with all this being said, I don't regret it. I don't regret any of it, because it was, you know, now that I'm past all that, you know, it was part of the story and part of what makes my story. It was part of what makes me who I ended up being. That had to be in my life, apparently, because it was, like I said in the beginning of the show, there was no way I could have pulled myself out of it. I know that sounds stupid, but it's true. I was on this ride. I was getting dragged through this ride, and part of it was because I was so jazzed about it. It was one of those things that made my life full. I couldn't wait to get up to the next day, to get into the gym and beat the shit out of myself with weights, to get up on stage. I mean, you know, when I start pre-contesting, it was like, I know I'm going to go into this massive surfer fest, because when you're pre-contesting, you're doing everything at even a more extreme level. You're starving yourself. You're doing more cardio. You're trying to live a life. You're trying to run a business. I mean, everything is, but yet the closer and closer that I got to that competition, it was like, I was on such a high. You couldn't even sleep at night. And that's when I started learning that, you know, people just in general, they don't have a lot of energy. They're lethargic. Well, I'm going to tell you something. When you strip body fat off you, the more body fat that you start stripping off you, the more energy you're going to get. Your body has plenty of energy, but when you load it down with carrying around extra body fat, that's when you start, all of a sudden, it's a liability. But man, getting close to that competition, there would be times I was sleeping 1-2 hours a night and I had all kinds of energy. It was that crazy. Anyway, so... Well, I just thought today maybe I'd just share some of my trials and tribulations and the stuff that were kind of high points in my life. just to give an insight, because, you know, sometimes what you see, and which is perception, and what is reality is way different. And like I said, in this case here, you know, there's no regrets. I chose to get on into the sport. I'm still living the bodybuilding lifestyle, but in a much different way. I would say, compared to the how I was living back then, I am so moderate, it's disgusting. But I'm still living that bodybuilding lifestyle. That lifestyle and that sport taught me so many things about discipline. And, you know, life is going to test you. And if you don't have a certain amount of discipline and a mindset to overcome, life is going to kick your ass. It's going to kick your ass all the time. Nobody gets out of this thing without getting their asses kicked. So, you know, when I look and, you know, talk about the trade-offs, and I think about what all the things I learned from the sport, I'm going to say it was worth it. So, you know what? Until we meet again, every once in a while, I all of a sudden, I got to get this shit off my chest before I explode. Hopefully, you thought it was something worthwhile, and I'll see you next time.